WHD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. The Israeli cabinet has approved a ceasefire deal with Hamas militant groups that would bring a temporary halt to the fighting. The government says that under the deal, Hamas is to free 50 hostages it is holding in the Gaza Strip over a four-day period. In a statement, Hamas says it welcomes a humanitarian truce in Gaza. More from CBS's Holly Williams in Tel Aviv.
Israel says there are 236 hostages. Only four have been released until now, while Israel's military has retrieved the bodies of two others from Gaza and rescued one soldier who'd been taken captive.
Ahead of a cabinet vote, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Israel would resume its offensive against Hamas after the ceasefire expires. The Pentagon says the U.S. military strikes two sites in Iraq in direct response to Iran-backed attacks, including one in Iraq yesterday, which involved use of close-range ballistic missiles. Middle East expert Aaron David Miller says this is definitely an escalation.
If it continues to escalate, then we could easily find ourselves in a broader regional confrontation.
Several parts of the country are experiencing or will experience rough weather tonight. Weather Channel meteorologist Chris Warren.
Tracking the potential for severe weather across the south this evening, overnight, tonight. It's possible damaging wind gusts and brief tornadoes. The same system helping to produce this, also bringing some messy weather for pre-Thanksgiving travel in the northeast.
In one of the most expensive corporate penalty cases in U.S. history, a cryptocurrency giant settles multiple criminal and civil charges. CBS's Tom Foti reports.
It is believed to be the world's largest exchange of the very unregulated world of cryptocurrency, and it and its chief executive now stand convicted of aiding international money laundering. Attorney General Merrick Garland.
Binance has agreed to plead guilty to willfully violating the Bank Secrecy Act, knowingly failing to register as a money transmitting business and willfully violating the International Emergency Economic Powers Act.
Binance agrees to pay $4 billion in penalties. Its CEO is stepping down. Tom Foti, CBS News, Washington.
OpenAI is bringing in the former head of Twitch as interim CEO, just days after the company pushed out its well-known leader, Sam Altman. Now in custody is a man accused of fatally shooting three people yesterday over a property dispute in rural Colorado. The Custer County Sheriff's Office says that Hanme Clark was arrested by New Mexico State Police. The sheriff says two men and a woman died at the shooting scene. On Wall Street, the stocks drifted lower, the Dow closing down 63 points. This is CBS News.
You don't need a job platform, you need a hiring partner. Indeed lets you schedule and conduct virtual interviews all from one place. Start at Indeed.com/credits.
I'm Dr. Stork.
Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The Wisconsin Supreme Court heard arguments Tuesday in a lawsuit challenging the state's legislative maps. Lawyer Mark Gaber, arguing for the petitioners, suggests Wisconsin's political boundaries are some of the most out of proportion in the United States.
This shocks people across the country who look at this map. This is like foreign to what redistricting looks like.
The court will decide whether Wisconsin's maps are drawn to the point of being unconstitutional. The opening weekend of the 9-day gun deer hunt in Wisconsin was slower than last year. The Department of Natural Resources says this year's opening weekend numbers were about 16% lower than last year. Wildlife officials blame mild weather. This year's season started several days earlier than last year's. I'm Nate Wiggehout, Civic Media News.
Badgers basketball gets past Virginia. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Wisconsin men's basketball team advancing to the final round of the Fort Myers tip-off tournament by beating Virginia 65-41 in Florida, a better showing than their performance at home against Robert Morris University. Badgers guard Chucky Hepburn.
You know, coming off that Robert Morris game, you know, we knew we had to fix things fast because we were going to play a great team like Virginia. And we locked in practice Saturday and Sunday. We were able to really lock in defensively, and that showed today.
So the Badgers will face SMU in the final round of the tournament, 7:30 tomorrow night. NBA, the Milwaukee Bucks with a five-game winning streak. Last night in Washington, it was the Bucks 142-129 over the Wizards. Adrian Griffin describes Giannis scoring 42 points.
Unstoppable. Man, he was in his rhythm tonight. He's unstoppable.
That's the Bucks head coach, Adrian Griffin. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear and colder tonight, a low in the mid-20s. For tomorrow, sunshine's back and warmer. Highs to the upper 40s. But turning much colder for Thanksgiving through the holiday weekend, highs drop to 30 to 35. Thanksgiving, partly cloudy, mostly sunny Friday, but mostly cloudy for the weekend. Currently 35 degrees.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. From Lake Wissota State Park and the Pablo Center, the entire Chippewa Valley is tapping in to the station talking about your hometown. 93.5, The Tap.
Podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I got a number of emails during the break asking me where they can find the community, the gated community woke turkey. 100% vegetarian fed. And like I said, from inception, bottle fed, cuddle warmed, a nice bed of, this is the turkey, mind you. You know, I was going to say breastfed, but that's a bit too far, even for me to go. But you know, this is what Jason Chaffetz is throwing out there. He spent $90 on a turkey. And you know why? Because Joe Biden made him do it. It's all Joe Biden's fault. And did you hear he's old? Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the Thanksgiving meal, how much it's going to cost, and is it Joe Biden's fault? I've asked Brandon Duke to come talk with us. He's a senior director of economic policy at the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org, the website. Brendan, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me on, Rick.
So let's start with Jason Chaffetz, former Iowa Republican congressman who bailed on Congress to go to Fox News. And now needs to continue the outrage candy to throw it out there. He spent $90 on a gated community woke turkey, tweeted out a picture of said turkey, $4.99 a pound, 100% vegetarian, you know, grass-fed, you know, sustainably done on small family farms. This is great stuff. I wish he would pursue those policies, but it's Joe Biden's fault.
Well, you know, I think Fox News salary goes pretty far, as you can tell. And, you know, I think if there's one person benefiting from the strong economy right now, it seems like it's Jason Chaffetz, who's able to go out and, you know, spend that kind of money on a turkey.
Point well taken. Who can afford a gated community woke turkey other than what was that saying that Harry Truman used to say? If you want to live like a Republican, vote for Democrats. Here we go.
That's exactly right. And, you know, I mean, I think people can come up with all sorts of numbers and tweet out whatever they want. But, you know, I think the American Farm Bureau, which is a group of farmers who just look up the cost of turkeys and cranberries and all the fixins for a typical Thanksgiving dinner, you know, they went across the country and total up the cost every year. And it's amazing. This year they found that the cost of a classic Thanksgiving dinner, so that's turkey, pumpkin pie, cranberries, some greens that nobody will eat, the whole thing, that went from $64 last year to $61 this year. And that's pretty astounding, because actually, you know, most years costs go up, but actually over the last year we've managed to see costs go down, which is a very big deal. And you know, I wish, you know, Jason Chaffetz was out tweeting about that fact, but I guess he's not. And, you know, I think an important point too is that actually the Thanksgiving dinner this year is actually more affordable than it was before the pandemic. And the way to think about that is that how much it costs as a fraction of a worker's earnings is lower than it was in 2017 or 2018. So, you know, just your, you know, lunch pail Joe who's buying, you know, classic Thanksgiving dinner, according to statistics, actually can get more, you know, more greens that he's not going to eat, more cranberries than he could have, you know, back 5-6 years ago.
But that's not what I hear on the F channel. That's not what the, that's not what I'm being told. Are you telling me that they're lying to me?
I mean, you know, I don't know what the grocery stores in Greenwich, Connecticut, or the Upper East Side of Manhattan are, you know, I don't know what those prices are, but when the good folks at the American Farm Bureau went across the country and, you know, went, you know, to communities outside Pittsburgh and, you know, in Dayton and, you know, all across the country to see, you know, what real Americans are paying for Thanksgiving, they said they found that, you know, the price went down.
Now, the American Farm Bureau, these aren't a bunch of hippie liberals. These aren't the people who, they're not the ones out there promoting the gated community woke turkeys, are they?
No, not at all. In fact, you know, I've worked in tax policy a lot and fought them a lot on the estate tax. So, you know, it's certainly, you know, this is not a Democratic leaning group. This is, you know, one of the premier trade associations for farmers, you know, who, you know, participate, you know, in the organization. So, you know, this is definitely not some left-wing group. This is about as, you know, rock rib, you know, I guess, you know, whatever political affiliation you want to guess farmers are.
Yeah, no, but, you know, this is the thing that gets me, because all the messaging I'm hearing is, you know, Joe Biden's destroying Thanksgiving, Brendan. I'm sure you've heard. Not only is Joe Biden old, but he's personally destroying Thanksgiving. That's the message. That's all I'm getting. But I'm not getting anything of, hey, here's what we would do differently. And this is the part that gets me. Now, Bob Casey has a report out. He's got two of them now, two greedflation reports. But this latest one, stuffing their pockets, how big food and agriculture businesses are making your holiday meals more expensive. He points out how mass consolidation and, of course, you know, corporations doing what they can, raising prices for absolutely no reason to line their pockets, are what's really causing the increase in costs and screwing us. In fact, he pointed out, you know, in my state of Pennsylvania, that, you know, it's like $3,500 increase costs due to, you know, this kind of gouging for the average Pennsylvania consumer in 22. I think it was $3,200 in 21. Oh, that's a lot of money coming out of people's pockets, right into the pockets of shareholders and CEOs.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and I think that makes, you know, what we've seen over the last year, the costs going down, all the more impressive that, you know, we do have this corporate consolidation. We do have, you know, price fixing in all of these sectors, and, you know, they've managed to get the cost to go down, and we're seeing wages rise despite all of that. And, you know, it'd be interesting to look at. I haven't looked at how the president's, you know, work on competition interacts with that, you know, whether, you know, in some ways it's kind of getting companies to ease up on this. But, you know, I do think it's just important to note that despite all of this, despite all of these trends that, you know, cause prices to go up, we're seeing prices go down, and, you know, the cost of Thanksgiving dinner is more affordable this year than it was 6 years ago.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Brendan Duke. He's a senior director of economic policy at the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org, the website, if you want to take a look at their work. Now, I've been calling for, you know, I was fortunate enough to be in Buffalo when the Broncos played the Bills on Monday night last week. And we stopped by the inaugural site of Teddy Roosevelt, which was fabulous. If you're ever in Buffalo, by all means, stop there. It's a really good educational thing. But I keep saying, you know, who's going to be this generation's Teddy Roosevelt? Who's going to be the guy? Maybe it's Bob Casey. I don't know, because I love these reports. I think every Democratic senator should be putting these things out. But who's going to be the person who goes up and busts some of this stuff up? Because I think the message out of all of this inflation is there really isn't competition in the market. We've got a handful of companies that control virtually every industry in this country. And sadly, it's getting worse. So for me, that's the question. Who's going to be today's TR?
I mean, look, I think you've seen the Biden administration take on a lot of this stuff. Obviously, you know, there's still more stuff they can do. But, you know, I think they've really called attention to this whole junk fee issue, where, you know, you go online and, you know, it says that the hotel will be $100 a night, and then all of a sudden there's a $20 resort fee for no reason. It's not like you're doing anything. You're just using the freaking hotel. And, you know, that's what you're getting charged for, cracking down on that. So, you know, I think all across the board, banking fees, you know, trying to hit the cost of insulin. So, you know, I think there's a lot of areas here, you know, there's certainly more they can do, but I think the administration's been very aggressive in attacking this. You've seen how they've gone after the airlines, you know, when the airlines have done stuff they shouldn't be doing. We actually see the price of air travel this year is double digits percentage lower than it was last year, which I think is another metric by which, you know, Thanksgiving is more affordable. You know, I'm from California, but I live in DC. And for someone like me, the, you know, the real cost of Thanksgiving isn't the turkey, it's the flight, right? Yeah. And, you know, that cost going down is a huge deal for Americans. Price of gas is lower than it was last year. So obviously, you know, folks who are, you know, just going a couple states over, that's a huge deal too. So, you know, I do think that, you know, on a bunch of metrics, Thanksgiving is more affordable this year than it was last year, in addition to people actually making more money this year than they did last year.
And that's the thing I don't think we're hearing enough about. You know, wages are outpacing inflation, and that's what we want. We want to make sure that, you know, and this is where I come back to, if we had stronger unions, we had more people in unions, we had more people working with contracts that have cost of living adjustments because of inflation, this wouldn't be as big of a problem. And I go back to my grandparents' generation, you know, in the 70s, when we had that hyperinflation, that stagflation that gripped us, you know, there were years my grandfather got multiple raises because inflation was above the number to trigger that cost of living adjustment. So by, you know, the 1960s, they bought their house. By the end of the 70s, a day's pay was their mortgage because their wages had kept up.
Sure.
And sadly, we don't have that labor. We don't have our grandparents' labor movement.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, again, in some ways, it's a little bit like when we're talking about competition, where, you know, I think it's important to know, since, you know, January 2020, so the month before the pandemic really started, prices have gone up 19%, which has been a huge pain for American families. But wages went up 22% over that period. So prices go up 19%, wages go up 22%, which leaves, you know, a typical American worker better off. Now, not all of them, you know, nobody's always the average. But, you know, I think that leaves them better off. Now, I think what's amazing about that is we did that without the strong labor movement, without, you know, without actually raising the federal minimum wage, without those basic steps. But by engineering, you know, this tight labor market, you know, the Biden administration was really able to kickstart that wage growth that I think is paying huge dividends. And I think Americans are really starting to begin to pick up on now. And I think those are steps that, you know, they are taking, that we are seeing the labor movement more invigorated than it has been in a good long while. You know, we've been seeing this with the UAW contract, with the UPS contract, with Amazon organizing, with all of these steps. So, you know, I do think that, you know, the Biden administration has played a key role in getting those wages going by, you know, taking us out of those depths of that really terrible economy that he inherited in January 2021 and getting us this really dynamic economy. And that next step is, you know, thinking about, you know, more structural ways to raise wages, such as giving us the first federal minimum wage increase that we've had in 17 years. Something like that would be a huge deal, you know, for American families.
Now, you said wages went up more than inflation, but you listen to the average person, you know, you'd think the sky was falling. So in that distribution, because you said it's on average, where did that go? Who saw the bigger wage gains? I've seen reports that say, you know, the people at the bottom saw the biggest boosts, which, you know, helped our social programs because we're not putting out as much food stamps and that kind of stuff. So we're finally getting employers at the bottom paying. But did the middle see much, or did it go between the bottom and the top? Any thoughts?
It was bottom out economics. So, you know, it's the opposite of trickle down, where essentially the lower in the wage distribution you were, the better off you did, you know, which is great, you know, has a lot of great benefits. And, you know, I think, you know, so, I mean, it's been a huge deal. It's made a huge difference in the lives of, you know, cashiers, home health aides, you know, the people who really do the hard work behind this country, and the people who's pay growth has been lagging the most have been people at the very top. And that's why you see tech people on Twitter complaining all the time about the economy, how, you know, the sky is always falling, that sort of thing. That may actually be true for people who are used to making $1 million a year. Most Americans aren't in that, you know, aren't in that zone. And
in that rarefied air.
Not used to an economy.
Right.
We're not used to an economy where I think that we're not used to an economy that works better for cashiers and home health aides than it does for, you know, portfolio managers at hedge funds.
Right. You see, the reason I ask that is because, you know, I keep coming back to what the Republican response to fixing inflation is. And as you've pointed out, the people at the bottom have seen the gains. You put money in the people at the bottom's pockets, they're going to spend it, and they're going to spend all of it. And it's going to reverberate through the local economy and have a snowball effect. They, I believe, want to crush that because that's where the inflation is. Giving those poor people the ability to pay their bills, evidently can't have that.
I mean, look, I think some of it is a reaction in that way, that you do have business owners who are annoyed that they have to raise wages and attract workers and, you know, do all those sorts of things compared to the economy we had 10 years ago, where it was a lot easier to be a business owner.
Yeah, it was a lot easier to exploit workers back then. Ah, the good old days.
Yeah, exactly. If you were running a restaurant, you could get a cashier with a graduate degree. Seems great to me if you're the business owner, you know, but doesn't seem that great if you're the worker. So I think, you know, we're just seeing a reaction of people just not used to, you know, paying workers a decent wage, and now they have to, and, you know, they're complaining.
And this is another one of those moments where I go, never in my lifetime has it been clearer which side a working person should be on. The political divides, in my view, and you can agree or disagree, have never been clearer than the moment we're in right now. And you know, for me, the path that we're on, where we're heading, is the right direction where we should be continuing. I think Jelly Bucket Joe's been doing a great job in moving us in that direction. And I fear that in the next year, because of, you know, Joe Biden ruined turkeys, that people are going to make the wrong choice, and we're going to head back to, well, the pre-pandemic days.
I mean, all I'll say to that is that, you know, I think, you know, when we get an inflation report or the unemployment report, you know, the stock market and the financial markets, they react within milliseconds. That's what they do. Americans do not have the time to pay attention to those sorts of things. I think their realization about how things are going, you know, happens a little bit slower. And so I think, you know, we have another year, and I think, you know, we're going to see people start to reverberate, that they start realizing that gas hasn't been going up. You know, they start realizing that their wages are rising. So I think it's just a really important, you know, dynamic that, you know, I think in today's Twitter age and social media and, you know, with financial markets, we're just expecting everybody to react to things extremely quickly, where, you know, most Americans, you know, they just only think about their finances, you know, they only really think systematically about their finances a few times a year. So, you know, I think that we're really going to start to see that stuff, you know, the realization about what a strong economy we're in, pick up, you know, over the next few months.
There you go. Brendan, I appreciate you taking time for us. Have a great holiday. I look forward to talking to you again down the road.
You too. Thanks for having me on, Rick.
Thanks so much, Brendan Duke. He is the Senior Director of Economic Policy there at the Center for American Progress. AmericanProgress.org, the website, if you want to take a look at their work. Highly, highly suggested. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Gotta tell you, you know, again, in talking with Brendan, you know, the reality is Yeah, prices are coming down. And he brought up the ticket thing. He brought up the junk fees. And as I said, I went to the Bronco Bills game, and the fees were just outrageous on Ticketmaster because you can't buy tickets anywhere else. There's literally no place for you to buy any tickets other through these through Ticketmaster. That's literally a monopoly. And the Live Nation CEO, and I guess the Live Nation is owns all of this, the CEO makes, what was it, like 5,100 times that of the average worker? 5,100 times. And you go, how is that possible? That's possible because every time you want to go to a sporting event, a concert, anything where there's a ticket involved, you're paying him. How come we don't hear that kind of gouging inflation and hear anger over that? And look, the Biden folks are trying. They're trying and not getting, well, not getting any credit for it from the corporate media, which again is why programs like ours, I think, is so very important. Great story coming out of Sweden. Evidently, the port of Malmo on September 7th, you had a ship come in where dock workers refused to take anything from Tesla off of the ship. Now, understand, you know, Tesla and the workers there at IF Metall, they've been kind of in a labor dispute. The workers want to organize, and the Tesla's being like they are here in this country. You now have solidarity sympathy strikes going on where dock workers aren't taking anything off of boats. Electricians won't repair any of the chargers. You got cleaning companies who won't come in and clean the buildings. Now, as of yesterday, the postal union, the postal workers, they're not delivering mail or packages. That's what solidarity looks like. That's the kind of stuff that working people have got to come back around to. It's, to me, it's that simple. Let's quick go to the phones. I've got Jack on line one. Jack, how are you today?
Just peachy, as my granny used to say. And thanks for taking my call. I've got a comment or two regarding inflation. A recent article in Business Insider and also in the Wall Street Journal pointed out roughly two-thirds of the so-called inflation caused by corporate price gouging.
Yep.
And according to recent Harvard Business Journal studies, among other things, corporate profits are at record highs. Gee, what a surprise. The solution to this is exactly what you say, I think, is, you know, we have to get people who are actually working together into unions, and they have to be able to actually be recognized and be allowed to work. The government so far under Joe Biden has been very helpful. The previous administration, shall we say, it was less than helpful. So that's, you know, that's at least one of the solutions to the problem.
Yep, I agree.
I'm not sure that you know, we can do anything from a other legislative standpoint.
I think we're paralyzed to do anything legislatively, but I think we have to. I go back to, we've got to start breaking up some of these monopolies in these industries where a handful of companies control all the cereal being made and all the chicken being produced and all the pork being produced and potatoes. Go down the list. There are a handful of companies in every industry where there's no real competition. And for me, that's a serious problem.
Yeah, the only way to actually have prices under some kind of market control to have real competition.
Yep.
And as you pointed out, there's a thing called a de facto monopoly, and I'm not an economist, far from it, but the principle I understand is basically that a few corporations control something like 75%, 80%, 90% of the market. And whether you look at the refiners for fuel or the airline industry or food corporations, you're seeing it all over the place. Sometime after my daddy died, he left me with a bunch of Standard Oil stock, and all of a sudden, Standard Oil was broken up. And I think we have to, that some of that has to be done today.
Yeah, I'm with you. Appreciate the thoughts, Jack. Thanks so much, buddy. As always, good stuff. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. You got a question, comment, something on your mind? I want to hear it. Also, miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcast, we will be there. Make sure you subscribe. Never miss a moment. Got to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
CBS News special report. A formal announcement of the deal is pending, but the Israeli cabinet has approved a pause in fighting with Hamas that includes the release of 50 hostages held by militants over a four-day period. The initial hostages will be women and children, with some Americans expected to be in that group. CBS's Margaret Brennan.
A very intense 7 weeks of diplomacy led by the United States and Qatar, a very small group of negotiators, and it really came together over this past weekend. A six-page agreement passed back and forth with Egyptian intelligence and Qatari government helping as the conduit to the Hamas fighters inside of Gaza.
Hamas says in a statement it welcomes a humanitarian truce. CBS's Holly Williams reports.
Tonight, Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu vowed this won't be the end of the war, saying his country will continue fighting until it's eliminated Hamas.
CBS News special report. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Did you know this local radio station is part of Civic Media? Learn more about the entire network at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wiggehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The Wisconsin Supreme Court heard arguments Tuesday in a lawsuit challenging the state's legislative maps. Marquette University's John Johnson says the court will decide if so-called islands outside district borders are constitutional.
So they proposed a map that kept municipalities in a single district, even when the municipality was composed of pieces that didn't all touch each other.
Johnson spoke with the Wisconsin Eye Public Affairs Network. Conservation groups are asking Governor Evers to block a proposed land exchange to build a new private golf course along Lake Michigan. Under the plan, the state would trade around 7 acres of the Black River Forest for about 9 acres of Kohler Company property. The groups say that the deal would set a bad precedent for public land use. I'm Nate Wiggehout, Civic Media News.
What is the meaning behind Movember?
It isn't just about the mustaches. Movember is meant to raise awareness about men's health, prostate or testicular cancer, or suicide, and also be a reminder to see your doctor. Movember started in Australia in 2003. It's now observed in more than 20 countries. So guys, remember to see your doctor, and however you celebrate this month, all of us with your local Civic Media radio station wish you a wonderful holiday season. I'm Terry Barr.
Weather brought to you by Bug Tussle. Bug Tussle, we're out there because you're out there.
Bug Tussle, we're out there.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear and colder tonight, a low in the mid-20s. For tomorrow, sunshine's back and warmer. Highs to the upper 40s. But turning much colder for Thanksgiving through the holiday weekend, highs drop to 30 to 35. Thanksgiving, partly cloudy, mostly sunny Friday, but mostly cloudy for the weekend. Right now it's 33.
Looking for a reliable, fast, and unlimited internet provider? Look no further than Bug Tussle. Whether you're streaming, gaming, working, or learning, Bug Tussle has you covered. Bug Tussle has continued to serve the rural communities of Wisconsin for over 20 years by providing the most reliable, high-speed internet and excellent local customer service. Call 877-227-0924 or visit bugtussle.com to get started. Bug Tussle, we're out there because you're out there.
Hey, son. How are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Tell a friend what's on tap.
There's a new station in town with conversation about Chippewa Falls, Eau Claire, and the Chippewa Valley.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
Rewild.org.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, you know, as we've been talking about, you know, strikes work, organizing works, threats of strikes work too. And those are my favorite ones. When you threaten to go on strike and things work out well, that's kind of where you want to be. And I know my friends out at the Culinary Union out in Las Vegas, they've been doing a lot of that, saying, look, one job should be enough. We should be able to support our families with one income and not just exist, but the old, you know, the old bread and roses, bread, yes, but roses too mentality. Right now, the Culinary Union's hosting their ratification vote for what they're calling the best contract ever with MGM Resorts, Caesar Entertainment, and Wynn Resorts. And here to share some thoughts on, well, if this is the best ever and how this could go, I've asked Cherie Evans Earl to come talk with us. She's a Mandalay Bay casino cocktail server, also a member of the Culinary Union, Local 226 out there in Vegas for the past 20 years. Cherie, thanks for taking time for us. So walk me through, you know, what's going on? What are you doing right now? Fill me in. And we have lost her. I have no volume, Cherie. I'm sorry. Somehow this just didn't happen. Can we hit the button? Evidently no volume. All right. I guess we're going to move along. Evidently we're having a little screw up, and this is what happens when you do the whole live radio thing. But Cherie, I appreciate the effort. We'll give it a try again down the road. But as they pointed out, look, there's a ratification vote going on, and I hope for their sake that, you know, this contract is everything that they need from it. That one income will be enough to support a family, and this is what we've been talking about for a while. This idea that, you know, inflation is what the Republicans want us to focus on. You know, look at the cost of the turkey is $4.99 a pound for the 100% vegetarian raised, grass fed, free range turkey. But they don't want you to talk about the victories that are happening in the workplace. And I've said for a very long time, if you want to reunite this country, which my Republican friends don't want us to do, but if you truly wanted to reunite this country, if you truly wanted to bring us back together and create an economy that works for everybody, you organize, you unionize, you give people the opportunity to fight for better wages, hours, conditions. You give people the opportunity to say, you know what? My work matters. My work is worth more than, you know, think about what a waitress makes or a waiter made. Or makes today. I mean, the minimum wage for a waiter in this state, of my state of Pennsylvania, is like $2.94 an hour. Now they have to, with tips and with everything else, have to get up to the whopping family sustaining rate of $7.25 an hour, which, again, I have no idea how anyone survives on that. But that's the law. The only way you raise that above the law is by saying, you know what? We demand better. And through collective action and collective bargaining, you demand. And this is what the Culinary Union out in Vegas has been showing us. They were threatening to shut the whole place down. And this is, I go back to one of those things where you go, at some point, you have to do the only thing that working people can do. And that's withhold your labor. Fold your arms, march your feet. And look, nobody wants to be on strike. Nobody wants to go through the kind of struggle and sacrifice that comes along with a strike. Ask some of the UAW folks who have fought for it. People want to go to work. They want to support their families. They want to live their lives. But sometimes you get pushed into a corner. And I look at, as I talked about in the last segment, you got these striking workers, these workers in Sweden who work for Tesla, who have been fighting this behemoth company for a long time. I guess it's been like 6 years now that they've been, you know, in this escalating dispute with IF Mattel, to where finally the workers have said, you know what? No more. We're not going to allow it. We're not going to stand for it anymore. We're not touching anything with Tesla's name on it. From the people who unload the ships, to the people who fix the charging stations, the people who now deliver the mail. Nope, you're out. Now understand, here in this country, all of that's illegal. Even if we wanted to have solidarity boycotts and sympathy strikes, highly illegal. To carry you'd be fired, unions would be decertified, you'd be sued out of existence, because that's how the corporations want it. They want working people neutered. They want people desperate and pliable, just happy to have a job. And the thing that gets me is, when we had 35% union density in this country, it was a lot easier for working people to support one another and say, you know what? Yeah, I may not benefit from your strike directly, but I'm going to support you. And we've seen this throughout our labor history, where people have come forth, the communities have come out in support. And as I say all the time, the bigger the strike line, the shorter the strike. The more people who are active and engaged, the more people who are involved, the better it is for all of us. And it comes back to that old labor frame. Which side are you on? Are you on the side of the well-to-do, the investor class, the moneyed interest? Or are you on the side of the labor force, the working people? This is the constant in an ever-changing world. The war between labor and capital. The war between people who hoard money and those who have to work for it. Those who move money from one pocket to the other and get richer, and those who have to feed their kids and support their families. To me, it's that simple. And it goes back to my eighth grade government teacher. When asked, which we don't know anything about the parties, which side do you choose? And his answer was quite interesting. He said, well, you have to probably decide, which side, of the coin you're on. Are you on the side of Republicans who want to enrich the wealthy and corporations and strengthen corporate power and the power of the wealth of the wealthy? Or do you want to be on the side of the Democrats who want to have big government programs to help the poor and the downtrodden, the sick and all that? Which side would you, because look, you in the middle are going to pay for both. So which side are you closer to? Are you closer to being someone who's very wealthy and would take advantage of all of the deregulation, the tax breaks, and all this stuff that they were really putting out in the early 80s? Or, the great society programs, taking care of those lazy people, of which, growing up, I guess I would have been categorized as, because my mother, we were on and off welfare a number of times. We were on and off food stamp, numerous times. We lived in a housing project. If it weren't for a lot of those social programs, I don't know where I would have been. When my mother passed, we were able to collect Social Security death benefit, which allowed my grandparents to take me in and get me to 18 and give me the opportunity to go out and be a productive member of society. And oh, by the way, pay all of that back. And I would argue with interest through the taxes that I've paid over the years. Kind of an investment in me. And that's how I see it. So, when that question came up, which side are you on? Clearly, I'm on the side of helping people who are struggling, giving them a helping hand. And I may be a little more in the we should be helping more category than a lot of people, because I see how these programs are set up not only to pigeonhole you in that situation, but not really to help you up. They're meant to keep you right where you are. Because you know what? If you dare go get a job, that's going to pay you just a little bit more. We're going to start taking away. So does your life get any better? And the answer is no. You stay right where you are. Wages haven't gone up. So 7.25 job or collecting food stamps and being able to take care of your kids at home, because you can't afford childcare on 7.25. So for me, I fell on the side of I would prefer to have a government that is more active in helping people's lives get better than deregulating and allowing the invisible hand to give us the invisible finger. So when I see these stories of workers in other countries showing incredible signs of solidarity, I go, we should be doing that here. When the UAW was on strike, you saw union members flocking to those picket lines. You saw community members flocking to those picket lines. When we were there, there were people from various unions. There were people from the town there to support them on a Saturday morning. This is where our fight is. This is where our reality should be. And this is where we should just be going, look, If we're going to reunite this country, we reunite around wages, hours, conditions, opportunities, investments. We fight on the things that matter to working people. It's the economy, stupid, to steal the James Carville frame. It's always been the economy, stupid. All of the fringe stuff, all of the stuff, the outlier stuff, all of the stuff that's thrown out there to keep us pitted against each other and yelling at each other in the streets. To me, that stuff's immaterial on the grand scheme. You want to bring people together. You want to organize a society. You do it in the workplace. Because again, all of those problems that we see being yelled at each other in the streets, the workplace seemed to work it out pretty well. So I'm a little bit more in that vein. It's a shame that we couldn't get Sheree on. I really wanted to hear more about what the contract had to offer. From what I've read, they did really well. And again, this is the kind of moment that we're in, where you know these contracts, these people are getting raises and benefits and increases that you know just don't come because of the benevolency of corporate America. Just doesn't happen. In fact, you know, I was just reading through some of the numbers that the Culinary Union put out, and look, they're saying this is the best ever. In the first year, there's going to be a 10% increase for every worker in the first year, and a total of 32% increase in wages over the life of the contract. That's a pretty big thing. They say, you know, under the previous contract, the end of the new five-year contract, the average Culinary Union member will be earning $35 an hour with benefits. That's a pretty good thing. Now remember, these casinos, they're making billions. This is just a drop in the bucket for them, and it comes down to they can share. They just don't want to. They can pay a living wage. They just don't want to. They have to be forced. And that's what this is about. This is about working people standing together and saying, we demand better. We're worth better. We're worth more. Our families are better than this. And then, if necessary, take into the streets. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Up the top. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1831. That was the day that silk workers went on strike in Lyon, France. It was one of several strikes known as the Canut Revolts. Canut was a term used to describe Lyonese silk workers. During this time, the textile industry was the main source of jobs in Lyon. Half of the working population of Lyon made their living at silk weaving. Silk was decentralized during this pre-industrial era. 1,000 plus bankers and traders controlled and financed the manufacturing and sale of silk goods. These manufacturers contracted 8,000 chief weaving craftsmen known as the Canuts. The craftsmen were paid for a specific order or by the piece. Canuts owned their own looms. These craftsmen, in turn, employed 30,000 apprentices. These workers were paid by the day and usually lived with their craftsmen employers. Women were also employed, but at a lesser salary. In 1831, a downturn in the economy caused a drop in silk prices and a lowering of workers' wages. As a result, workers tried to get a minimum price imposed on silk. When their demands were refused, the workers seized a local arsenal. The insurgents took over Lyon after a bloody battle with the local military. There were 600 casualties and 100 deaths. The French government sent in a veteran of the Napoleonic Wars with an army of 20,000 to restore order. Faced with this force, the workers gave in without any more bloodshed. Some workers were arrested, but eventually acquitted.
The minimum price for silk was abolished, and the revolt unsuccessful. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. So, hey, Christian Sharia law right around the corner. And I've been saying this for a long time. Get ready for it. Republicans are hell-bent on it. And what I love hearing is my freedom-loving red hats telling me how Joe Biden's destroying their freedoms, stealing their freedom from them. And oddly enough, maybe they should be listening from the screams coming inside their own camps. Because I'm sure you saw the Mike Johnson thing. I guess it was about, from the way the story goes, it was a year ago the Supreme Court had a decision that was that struck down restrictions on the use of contraception, and it barred bans on gay sex and legalized same-sex marriages and all this stuff. And Mike Johnson was all in favor of the Supreme Court, you know, striking all that down. And he said, quote, one of the primary purposes of the law in civil government is to restrain evil. We have to acknowledge, he said, collectively that man is inherently evil and needs to be restrained. Now, I find that interesting when you couple that with the story that evidently he and his son are using this Covenant Eyes app, which is an anti-porn phone app that they spy on each other through this Covenant Eyes app. I guess what it does is it takes screenshots of whatever it is that you're looking at every couple of seconds, every couple of minutes, whatever it does, and then sends it to the other person, you know, kind of to keep you honest. And it made me think of, you know, generally, this is stuff that addicts do. You know, when people have an addiction, they need a sponsor, they need someone to keep them on the straight and narrow. So I'm going, you know, is Mike Johnson, you know, got a problem maybe? Wants the kid to keep him on the straight and narrow? I don't know. But there are some who are saying, hey, is it a good thing that you have this private corporation taking screenshots of the speaker's phone on a non-government server? Could that not be something of, I don't know, security risk? Outside of the fact that it's kind of weird and controlling, it does send an interesting message for me. And this is the part that I come back to, as I've been saying for a very long time. The evangelicals, the Christian right, these are people who are zealots. These are people who want, you know, not just democracy or fascism. They want a theocracy. They want, you know, they want rule of their God, not anyone else's, but their narrowly defined, angry, vengeful God. The one who punishes, retribution, eye for an eye. Or Harry Palm for Harry Palm. I don't know. He's got the app. Who knows? But, you know, it's one of these things where I've been saying for a while that the Christian right, that the extreme, the theocratic right, they want to bring a Christian version of Sharia law here, which, again, puts women back in the kitchen, barefoot and pregnant, gays back in the closet and useful only in the dark eras and dark recesses of their repression, and, you know, blacks and minorities back in the field doing menial labor. This is their view. This is their vision. This is what they want for America. They're not shy about it, because they're true believers. And this is the scariest thing, that you got a guy who seems reasonable. He seems like a nice, seems like you'd like to have him as a neighbor, but with some really dark, horrible policies. And as I've been saying for a while, you know, when they were talking about, you know, overturning Roe, I said, Griswold's not far behind. Contraception will be the next thing to go, the next thing that they're after. And surprise, 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 it's what they're talking about. Because again, it's not about how much they love the babies. They don't care about the babies. They give two you-know-whats. Because look at what they do when they have a chance to support children. Look at what they do when they have a chance to feed them and educate them and get them health care. They destroy all that. There's nothing there. Oh, I know. But Rick, we're going to let the churches do it. Well, if that would have worked, because I've had a couple of thousand years to do it, we'd be doing it. Sadly, not. And when I look at someone like Joel Osteen, who is like the supposedly the poster child of religiosity, who pays himself $54 million a year, lives in a gigantic mansion while people all around him are going hungry. And oh, by the way, when Houston was flooding, locked the doors and barricaded the quote unquote arena church so no one could get in, which was on higher ground. You know, a real Christian thing to do. So I'm telling you, I'm curious where we're going to end up. I hate to say fearful, because I'm hoping that people wake up to the reality that religious extremists are beginning to control large portions of our government. The Speaker of the House, two heartbeats away from being the president. That's a pretty big deal. So when I hear people say Joe Biden's ruining democracy and ruining Thanksgiving, I go, have you looked inside your own house? Now, interestingly enough, Forbes Media Group was up for sale. And this is one of those things that just makes me go, you can't make this stuff up. It was an $800 million to buy the Forbes Media Group. There were a group of investors led by this tech executive, Austin Russell, the 28-year-old founder of Luminar. Evidently, again, can't make this up. I know, it's fake news, Rick. Evidently, it has collapsed because there were, massive concerns of connections to Russia and other foreign influences. So yeah, the people who hate us were going to buy a large media group here in the country. And only we would do something this dumb. We have Chinese companies who own a big portion of our food supply. We got Russians, Russian TV was on. We've got foreign influences in our media. Yeah. And do you think they're going to be fair and balanced? Do you think they're going to be judicious in their coverage of how, Joe Biden's old? I'm sure you've heard of it. Do you think they're going to be fair and balanced on what the interests of this country are? No, they're going to play the default line. They're going to divide us even farther, because that not only does it sell, it's good for their special interests. If they can destroy us from within using our own tools to do it, what a win for them. And you got someone like Donald Trump who's out there, just kind of pushing the message. And I got to wonder, we're seeing a lot of people resigning from Congress. You got this Bill Johnson guy who evidently is leaving. He's going to become the president of Youngstown State. He was the guy we didn't hear much from until the East Palestine train explosion, which we don't hear anything about anymore, do we? Odd how we don't hear about the after effects and how that community is getting screwed over, because it's just not sexy. It doesn't say Joe Biden's old. Which is the main, and he ruined Thanksgiving, I'm sure you've heard. But he's stepping down, and a bunch of people are stepping down. And there's part of me that goes, one, they know there's anger coming, or two, they just realize that they're horribly dysfunctional and aren't going to be able to do anything, and they're just going to cash in while they can. And where does that leave the rest of us? This is where I keep coming back to, and the one thing that I'm hopeful for in the new year is maybe, especially as the labor movement gets a little bit more muscular, a little bit more militant, a little bit more demanding, is that we organize ourselves. We realize that this is a country of, for, and by we the people, and that our government works in our interests, because it is our government. Not that of the special interests, not that of the big money, but ours. And maybe when we realize that it is ours, maybe, and I'm hoping this is where, again, the eternal optimist in me says that maybe we start fighting on the right issues. maybe we start becoming a country that says maybe we do need to feed children and feed the hungry and help homeless veterans and do all of those things that the high-minded part of us wants to do instead of constantly being fed the outrage candy. I want to hear your thoughts. I hope everyone has a wonderful Thanksgiving. We will be back after the Thanksgiving break. But I hope you spend time with your families and have a great time. Thanks for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
WCFW HD2 Radio Chippewa keeps Falls, your community W228 entertained, Eau Claire,
and connected. It's streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
Network of local radio stations.